Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 558 for comics originally released on April 18th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Action Comics number 1000. This is an 80-page giant. Man, there was a lot of stuff in this.
A lot of stuff. No ads.
I don't know if we necessarily want to go story by story because there was like 11 of them.
Yeah, I started doing that and I put down scores for all of them and I was like, some of them are so short, it's probably, you don't want to go title by title.
I tried to make a line or two note on each one, but I didn't go and score all of them. There were a couple that really stood out to me as better than some of the others.
Definitely. Yeah, some were definitely much better quality. Some were just too short. 3 pages, it's only so much you can do.
Yeah. Just running through them in blazing speed, the first one was kind of a nice story about the people of Metropolis trying to honor Superman and how he's kind of a little uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, he doesn't like being in the spotlight. He likes to just take care of the problems.
Yeah, I thought it was a good story that captured a lot of kind of the iconicness of Superman.
Yeah, and it was really a feel-good story, and I really enjoyed it. It's a good way to start it off.
Yeah, it was a good start to it. The next one with Vandal Savage, I thought it was interesting they mentioned Hypertime, because that doesn't get used too often. But I thought it was a really cool use of it to basically give an excuse to do splash pages that are kind of a walk down memory lane.
Oh, yeah. Every time frame and every major milestone in Superman's history. Here's the 30s. Here's the 40s. Here's Kingdom Come. And it was really nice. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. The next one with the school hostage situation, it was kind of a nice one about how Superman couldn't be everywhere at once. I didn't think it was a highlight of the issue, but it wasn't bad.
Interesting, because that was one of the ones that it wasn't as good as the first two, for sure. But it was a good story.
It was good. The chess match in the next one between Superman and Lex, I thought it was a great concept. I felt it was a little bit of a shame that they went with kind of the cliche evil Lex versus like a more modern, nuanced Lex.
Definitely.
If it would have had a little bit more of a almost psychological back and forth of them trying to take each other's measure or something, they're friends, but not quite. It could have been better.
Yeah, it would have made it more interesting. You skipped over the one with the car by Geoff Johns.
I thought that was the one after that.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm just flipping through. My bad.
Okay, I tried to get them in order. I might have gotten them wrong.
All right.
The one with the car I thought was interesting because I'm pretty sure that was the car from the original, Superman story in the cover.
That's the way I took it, and it was beautiful artwork.
Yeah. I thought it was a really nice story about how Superman can kind of inspire people to be the better versions of themselves.
Yes. This was another really feel-good story. I liked it.
Yeah. So the next story, the fifth season, I mean, I liked that version of Lex, but there was something about it where they just didn't stick the landing on that.
Yeah, there was something off about it, and that was one of the weaker stories, I think, in the book.
Yeah. The next one was kind of a reveal as to what he was doing, but I'm going to go ahead and say it because I thought it was a really interesting story, and without saying what he's doing, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Basically, Superman is visiting Jonathan and Martha Kent's grave just before, like, the Earth gets swallowed by the sun, like, 4 billion years from now.
Oh, yeah.
And at first, it's, well, is it a waste of time to come back? I feel obligated to do it. I do it every year. It's showing how even millennia hence, Superman is still kind of got this, pardon the pun, grounded aspect of being an Earthman, of his parents dying and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they had some cool stuff on the, you know, like in some sort of, I don't know, infinity formula or whatever. So Lois is still alive and John, and this is how Superman's around. How while he's got these godlike powers, he certainly never envisions himself that way.
Yeah, he envisions himself a son of these great people who raised him.
Yeah, a farm boy.
A farm boy, yeah, exactly.
I thought it was a great story, and it was really classic Superman in many respects.
Definitely, and that one was Tom King.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a good job with that.
The next one, which centered around the Daily Planet. One, we don't get enough Daily Planet stuff these yes. days.
Two, that's pretty much gone.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Jerry Ordway art.
Definitely.
You just can't. And certainly they didn't do it here. And what I liked is it was kind of showing how Superman gets the same kind of charge out of being Clark Kent on a deadline doing a story as he does being Superman saving lives very directly. And he feels he's doing as much good as a reporter as a superhero.
Exactly. So it's just as rewarding to him doing one job or doing the other. He doesn't choose one over the other. They're both rewarding to him.
Well, and it allows him to kind of compete on a more level playing field or whatever.
Definitely. Definitely.
So it was that was a great story. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Like you said, I love the art in there.
The next one was kind of sort of like the final fate of Superman or whatever. And it first off, it had Jose Luis Garcia Lopez art. You literally cannot get better than this, in my opinion.
Very good art.
Absolutely amazing. And it was kind of a, from the future, let's look back at the ancient Superman and the legend and the myth, whatever. And it featured Mr. Mixopitalik or whatever, however you choose to pronounce the name, because I am fairly certain there is no correct pronunciation.
I will take yours because I'm not going to try.
Yeah. I actually looked up on Wikipedia if there was a correct one, and it was interesting. Like, the different cartoons and TV shows had gotten what was the then either a sanctified and blessed version from DC, or they did it as best they could or whatever. And there's a couple of different variations on it. Anyways, it was a fun story. It was terrific art. And I liked at the end how we got a little kind of a cameo of Batmite, Johnny Thunder's Thunderbolt, and Zook, the partner or pet or whatever of the Martian Manhunter.
Oh, okay. I was wondering who the heck that was.
And there are others who came from the fifth dimension.
Okay.
So I thought that was a nice little kind of Easter egg.
It was a nice story. It was really nice.
Yeah. It was a cool look back, and I loved how this is how the story ends, and they couldn't, Mixopitalik couldn't end it. It's like he doesn't want the story to end, neither do we.
Exactly.
So that was fun.
Now, the next one I really enjoyed.
Yeah, this one was kind of going on the whole concept of faster than a speeding bullet.
I really loved it. It was just, it was kind of intense, and I don't know why, but this one was one of my favorite stories in the book.
This, yeah, was one of the highlights. Brad Meltzer and John Cassaday, so an excellent creative team.
Very good artist, yeah.
And Superman's basically, there's this person, she's going to get shot, hostage situation. She's so far away, the bullet's already been fired. It's math at this point. It's not looking good. And just, I mean, you could argue, depending which version of Superman is yours, if you will, just how fast he can be and whatnot. But I liked how they didn't really give, it's so far away, I can only go this fast, but it is further than I can get to in time, but it'll be close, kind of a deal.
Exactly. The stress level is amplified, but yeah, it's not a mathematical equation.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know at least the variables in it or the specifics of it, but we know he doesn't think he can get there quite in time.
Yeah, and I think if they would have put that in, it would have taken away from the story.
Absolutely, because somebody would, he can go faster than that. We've seen him do this.
Exactly.
And he's going flat out, so he's going as fast as he thinks he can go, kind of a deal. Anyways, it was a classic story. It captured the iconic Superman aspects in many respects. And again, that kind of literal play on the faster than a speeding bullet is got an iconicness in and of itself.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I remember the Superman show when I was a kid. I probably watched it in the 70s and the 80s. It was reruns at that time, but the old black and white, you know, stronger than a locomotive, faster than a bullet. I mean, it's just the old time Superman that I remember when I was growing up.
Yeah. I mean, to me, they're very clear, iconic ages of Superman, and that television show really defined it, I think, for a generation. And those of us of you know, our age, a later generation, caught it in the reruns, and it was classic stuff.
Yeah, and it was still good when I was watching it.
Oh, yeah, it was terrific. So I thought they did a good job of honoring a lot of that aspect of it, and just, again, most of these stories really caught the iconicness of Superman and didn't get trapped in the minutiae of any particular either continuity or kind of debatable aspect, I guess.
And with me being a newer DC reader, I really appreciated that because me not knowing who every character was in every panel, I enjoyed this book immensely.
Yeah. The last story, I think, was the one everybody was kind of waiting for in many respects. It was Brian Michael Bendis, Jim Lee, so again, creative team, you know, top notch. I thought this was really good stuff. It was great story, great art. It had a classic Superman feel, and it really got me excited about the new Man of Steel miniseries coming up.
I loved it, and it felt like Brian Michael Bendis is re-energized now when I read this. Because it seemed like some of the stories, the last books he was doing at Marvel, the little wrap-ups, it seemed like he had gotten a little bit tired almost. And so he came out and he's swinging. It seemed fresh. I love the art. It was really great. And I was kind of happy. I believe this is a brand new character, correct?
I believe so. The one he's fighting?
Yeah, Rogal Zar. Yes.
Far as I know, but he could be, I don't know, something from the 50s for all I know.
Well, I was looking it up online. I didn't see him referenced anywhere else. So I'm thinking that's kind of cool. We have a new character. We have a new writer, a new creative team that's bringing forth with Brian Michael Bendis, and now we have a new character.
Yeah, I thought it was again what I was hoping for out of a new run of Superman. And I'll be honest, I wasn't totally convinced Bendis could really pull it off, because I do think there's a stylistic difference between Marvel Comics and DC Comics.
There really is.
I mean, it's not that one's better than the other, but they hit different chords, different notes, and in different ways.
Yeah. They really do. And me being reading across the board, it's noticeable. You can see the differences when you read the entire line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this got me really excited for it, because I was kind of going into I'm a little bit sad camp when, they're replacing the writers of Superman and Action Comics. But then I got re-energized when I read this, because I feel like things are being handed off into capable, good hands.
Yeah. I thought they did a really good job with this issue. Having seen a lot of Marvel, X-100 issues, I did think it would have been cool to get like the 1,000 covers of Action Comics or something.
Oh yeah, that would have been a lot of covers in there, but yeah, that would have been really cool. But this one thing I wrote, this was a big celebration, I felt like.
Yes.
And that's like when we reviewed Daredevil 600, it felt like there was almost no celebration there. It seemed like everyone was stepping up to the plate, all these writers, all these artists, and just giving their own little tweak or twist on a 4 or 3-page story or 5-page story, whatever it was. And everyone just wanted to celebrate him and say, this is why this character is a great character.
Yeah. I mean, I could name probably, a few dozen other creators that I thought would have been fun to have in this issue. But again, there's only so many pages.
Yeah.
And they certainly did not skimp on creators whatsoever.
No, so many people got in here. And one thing I was going to also mention, some people mentioned $7.99 cover price, but this isn't a bad price to pay, because it's cover to cover stories. There's no advertisements in here. And 80 pages, if you were looking at $3 or $4 books and the amount of pages you get, this should have been priced at $16, $12, depending on the price point. So this is an affordable comic, even though it's $7.99. Oh, yeah, $7.99.
Yeah, it's certainly not cheap at that price, but to your point, you totally get the value for the money in terms of the page count, etc.
Exactly. It's well worth it. So being a new reader, I loved it. I loved and I'm not normally an anthology guy, and this made me happy when I read it.
Yeah, I mean, I typically don't favor the anthology, because it's like you get into a story, it stops, you get into a story, it stops. But again, like you said, this is a celebration of Superman, why these creators, why we as fans love this character, why he's been around for, the 80 years. It's not doing an anthology would have been a mistake. I think they could have told a really awesome 80-page story, done flashbacks to say, okay, this artist will do that one, this will do this other one, or whatever. But what they did really worked.
Oh, yeah, really worked. So I felt like with what they came to with all the writers and all those small stories, they knocked this thing out of the park.
Yeah. Again, there were one or two where an aspect or two didn't land exactly as I would have liked or whatever, but they were few and far between. Typically, out of 11 stories, I'd be happy if I liked about half of them, and I'd be surprised if I liked about half of them. Here, I liked most of them, and there were a couple that I just was totally blown out of the water by. So the one or two that didn't kind of stick the landing is incidental and not a big deal.
Oh, yeah. And those two that didn't stick the landing for me, there was two of them, they were still above average.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would have been fun if at the end they had done a credits page for all the people who've worked on the title over the decades.
That would have been cool because, yeah, that was missing. It's just on the very back cover, you just have the Bendis is coming splash. That's it.
But I don't know that they would necessarily even have all the names to go put on such a thing.
Yeah, that's true. There would have been a lot of names.
And the risk of missing somebody would be pretty bad.
Yeah, you don't want to offend anyone or any fan group out there.
No, but yeah. For me, this was an A. It's an awesome book. It's how to do this kind of landmark anniversary and celebration sort of issue.
Yeah. For me, this was nice because not knowing a ton of background on Superman, everything was enjoyable. Everything was accessible. 9 out of 11 stories were great. So I was super happy and not a bad price point for what you get. So this was A for me too.
Yeah. And again, with this kind of a price point, the fact that they really justified it is appreciated.
Exactly, because a lot of the comics we read, you know, when they're overpriced or when they're priced a little bit higher, you don't always feel like you're getting that extra from the dollar or two that they're charging. And this one, I felt like they really gave you your money's worth.
Yeah, when another comic will toss a 8-page kind of pointless backup story and add an extra dollar to the price, I'm like, you know, you didn't have to do that.
Exactly. I'm in the same boat. I agree.
So out of 11 stories, if they had taken 8 out, this would have been free. No, I'm kidding.
That would have been nice.
That's how the math works, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we head over to Marvel?
Yes.
This is Weapon X number 16. This is... which part of the story is this part? This is actually the conclusion to... I guess a two-part story, because I swear this started just in the last issue.
Yeah, I read the previous issue, and it was the start of a fight between Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Yeah, I had read 14 and 15 right before this, and 14 had wrapped up the nuke storyline or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, this started up.
Now, they had talked about this being a thing where every year Sabretooth wants to kill Wolverine for his birthday or fights him, beats him senseless for his birthday. I don't remember that happening every birthday.
They've done this sort of a story a number of times before.
Okay. I probably wasn't reading that.
And I've read a number of them.
Oh, okay. So nothing new for you.
There was a little new because we get the old man Logan perspective.
That's true.
But there were a few things about this. I mean, again, the annual Sabretooth Wolverine fight, and it's annual in story time, not our time, which thank God. I mean, imagine a 6-issue arc every year. No, I'm kidding. I think this might have been the first time in this title, and certainly in a while, that they really mentioned Sabretooth's, what do they call it, the inversion that happened at the end of Axis or whatever back in, I think it was 2014.
Yeah, that was right before Rick Remender left Marvel.
Yeah. And
it was like his big thing.
Sabretooth, Havoc, and Iron Man were the ones that... had a lot of people had gotten kind of this morality inversion, but those were the three that where it stuck. They were shielded when it got undone.
Yes.
So nice to kind of pick up on that and play with it a little bit. It gave the feel that they're starting to backpedal on it a little bit, like it may be wearing off. This issue and the last issue apparently covered a full 24-hour period, because the phone does the, hey, happy birthday, it's midnight, and then at the end, it's, hey, it's the next midnight, birthday's over.
Yeah, fight's over.
Did not feel remotely like 24 hours had passed in those two issues.
No, it did not. It didn't feel like 24 hours of fighting had happened or anything, so yeah, it was really quick. And one thing I really did not like about this issue is you kind of had two writers on it. You had Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente, which is fine, but you had two artists on there too, which they did it strategically when they went to the old man Logan timeline.
Mm-hmm.
When you had Andre Sorrentino in there, along with, I guess it's Roland Boschi. I don't want to butcher his name.
Boschi sounds right.
Okay. Roland Boschi's art is really not in the same level as Sorrentino's. And so it was just glaringly obvious when you got to those pages. Like, wow.
Yeah, I thought the art style was fairly different, and I think the art was better on this title earlier on.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's happened. It just seems like it's been dropping lately.
Well, they started the title with Greg Land.
Yes, and he's great.
he may reference, but he's great when he does that. And then Yildiray Senar, I think, was the artist after that. who's also got a really nice, clean style along the lines of Greg Land, less referenced, but still more detailed, cleaner line work than either of the artists gave here.
Yes.
What we've got isn't bad, but it's not kind of the higher watermark that I think the title had had before.
Yeah, I kind of got the feeling that they're almost peeling off their talent towards the big summer events and the new books that are coming out. And that tends to happen whenever there's getting ready to be a seismic change with either Marvel or DC. You'll see as the titles almost start to peter out, the work, the quality of the artwork kind of diminishes.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm seeing here. So that was what disappointed me, because I was telling you when we were talking about books to review, I was like, I love Wolverine and Sabretooth when they fight. But I was like, art-wise, I was like, it's a little bit disappointing.
I mean, this is a concept that, again, like I said, they've done a number of times before, but that's not to say they can't do it well, they can't do it a new twist each time or whatever. This one didn't feel like it particularly added anything new. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't one that if you came to me and said, I want to find like the ultimate, you know, Sabretooth Wolverine fight or something like that, I would not have pointed to this one.
Yeah, like some things stick in your mind. Like when I think of Sabretooth and Wolverine, I remember, I think it was Wolverine number 10. I picked up off the newsstand at the little convenience store, and that fight, I can still see it in my head. Whereas this one, I, like you said, I probably won't remember this maybe even 2 or 3 months from now. I'll know there was a fight that happened because we reviewed it. But yeah, it's not something that shakes it up or changes the status quo. The best thing in here that I think happened was seeing Old Man Logan and the Wolverine from Old Man Logan's timeline and how that fight played out. And I would like to see that in more detail.
Yeah, I think there was a lot more they could have done with that.
Yeah, because that would have made it really cool.
I mean, it almost would have been funny if, in place of the annual fight this year, Wolverine basically had arranged for one of the various bazillion telepaths the X-Men have to let the fight kind of replay from the future in Sabretooth's mind, if you will.
And so he felt like he had accomplished something.
I mean, Sabretooth wouldn't have felt shortchanged. We'd have gotten basically more of the Old Man Logan aspect of it. I don't know. It could have worked.
That could have worked. That would have been interesting. I would have liked it. And it's nice. It ends up with, like, you know, nobody's dead. I'll just leave it there. Nobody dies in this issue.
Yeah, but for a most of an issue-long fight scene, I've read better.
Yeah, I've read much better. So, I mean, this was kind of a, as far as fights go and battles, you know, of iconic characters who tend to battle all the time, this is on the lower echelon of that ladder.
Yeah. For me, I'm kind of right there between that C+ and that B-, and it's not a bad issue, but it's also not one that I can really say, gosh, you've got to go check out or something. So I'm kind of going to lean, I think, more towards that C+.
Yeah, I'm there too. I mean, Wolverine traditionally is, you know, I always used to tell people he's my second favorite character, so I love reading anything Wolverine. But this fight was not very memorable. The art was just kind of so-so. And it just seems like it's something that feels like it's getting wrapped up before titles kind of change and new things come out. So for me, it was a decent comic, but it's just average. I gave it a C.
Yeah. And again, most comics are going to be by definition average. It's just the way
exactly.
It works.
Yeah, not bad. It's just it is what you'd expect a comic.
Yeah. But I want better.
Me too. I want to pick better.
With that, shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, and this one made me happy this week.
Yeah, this is Skyward. It's from Image. It's the first issue, and this is one where the concept sounded interesting. It's essentially what happens if gravity gives out one day.
Yeah, and it was really cool. And did you know Joe Henderson is the writer on this? Do you know what he does? I didn't know if you researched it at all.
According to the solicit, he was the showrunner, is the showrunner of Fox's Lucifer.
Yes, he is. Okay, I didn't know if you knew that. So, yeah. That was interesting. Yeah, showrunner, which means he's basically running things for the Lucifer TV show. And here he is coming out with a comic. I like that.
And a good comic.
Really good comic. I was impressed. There's people that have been talking on the Slack channel all week. Have you guys read Skyward? It's so good. It was, so I was interested to read it.
I thought the art was good. The story was really solid. It went from a blank page to fleshing out the concept in the story. And it strikes me as the kind of thing that could make for a fun movie.
Yeah, a good movie, or even a TV show if you wanted to go that way. But this could definitely be a movie. I was looking at it like I could see this on the big screen and it would be fun.
I think even with current effects and the affordability of them, doing the present day aspect, because this starts out at one point and then jumps 20 years. So if you're at the 20 year later, where gravity is kind of sort of almost there, but not quite, doing all the floating scenes on a ongoing TV show, that'd be tough.
Yeah, that'd be kind of pricey.
If they could do it, I'd be all for it.
That would be a big budget TV show.
You know, What got me with this is they set up, we see the moment when gravity kind of gives out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Willow, the lead character, her father, because we see her as an infant, her father's like, you know, I thought this would happen kind of a deal. And I'm like, okay, I want to know more about that.
Exactly. That's the first thing I was going, what do you mean you thought this would happen? Everything go to normal too. There's no gravity. That makes no sense.
Well, it's weird because it happens as he drops his coffee mug or whatever, and it just kind of floats there. So I'm unclear if gravity is like totally gone, if we're in like a zero, almost zero G, what's going on? Because he's still standing fine without like suddenly floating up.
Yeah, I almost looked at it like it's almost like the gravity you would see on the moon where you can float around and bounce around, but eventually you come back down slowly. That's the way I took it, but I don't know.
That's kind of what I took it to, because he refers to it as low gravity and stuff. But then I got a little puzzled when, I guess when he first tries to walk across the room, that's when you get the, whoa, I totally misjudged and I you know, flung myself to the ceiling. You know, because again, you're exerting more pressure than the gravity would allow.
Yes.
But then when we get outside and we start seeing cars floating and stuff like that.
Big tanker truck floating.
I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, because if there's no gravity, there's going to be no oxygen for us, and we will not be living very long.
Well, and something had to start to push these things upward to overcome whatever gravity there is.
Exactly. They don't just miraculously start floating. No gravity, there's still some kind of force that has to push it up into the air.
Well, and presumably the mom, Lily, was jogging or whatever. So she had, I guess, been mid-jog, mid-stride or whatever when it kicked in. So she was starting to coast up towards that lamppost. Mm-hmm. But when she fails to get back down, we see her just sailing up and up.
Yeah, looks like she's going into space.
Yeah, so I'm assuming if that's the case, this 20 years later, presumably these people didn't come back down, that there's this orbital ring almost of some pretty nasty stuff out there.
Yeah, now that you mention it, that would be pretty nasty because, yeah, bodies and vehicles and whatever, dogs, who knows, anything that wasn't tied down at that time.
I mean, maybe it just keeps going so it's not hanging around the earth or whatever. I don't know.
It could be gruesome. But now the comic is not gruesome. It took a much lighter tone after that with the 20-year jump. I liked it. It got very almost charming at that point where, you know, like it starts addressing, you know, guns and signs that people run into and, you know, people who may be handicapped, you know, at one point in a gravitational world into a world with no gravity. And I liked that stuff was addressed. It made it really cool.
Well, even subtle things like when she first sees Joan or whatever, who's out on the roof, Joan is tethered.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's some subtle aspects of the art there that you can miss over if you're not careful. And it was funny because while we don't know all the specifics about this gravity failure or whatever, they still did a really good job kind of setting it up and implying a lot of kind of the rules that are happening, both by what happened back then and what we get now, this 20 years later, of, like you said, with the gun and some of this other stuff, and just how the younger generation, this is just how life is. They've adapted to it.
Oh yeah, it almost like it's comical some of the things that we used to do in the world with gravity, how they kind of laugh about that stuff.
The other thing I thought was interesting was when we get, and I don't know that she gets the name, the other person at the delivery thing.
Okay.
The really large lady.
Yes. Okay, I'm there.
If
I'm on that page now.
You don't have gravity, you can't really work out. So some people's metabolism not going to work in their favor.
Oh yeah, that's very true. They didn't talk about that there, but that would happen a lot, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, they do have somebody who's working out, but with bands to make some resistance.
Yeah.
In there. Yeah, which was it was kind of interesting. It's kind of funny. I don't want to spoil too much of this, but it was just funny when she walked into that room.
They do some really good stuff in this, and it's got a I don't say sense of humor, but it's got an all ages aspect to it in all the right ways. It's got a unique sensibility to it, and I mean, I've read tons of comics, I watch tons of TV shows, a lot of sci-fi movies, read some novels even. This is a concept that is new and is different. I'm not going to say it's totally unique. I'm sure there's been somewhere else that gravity has failed. Matter of fact, I could probably name one or two comics. But I thought this did a really smooth implementation of it, a good execution of it, and it felt new and inventive.
It really did. It was. I hate using that word, but I want to say it. It was a charming comic, a light read, but at the same time, there's a depth there where he could expound on the story. He could go 60 issues with this thing if he wanted to. I don't think that's what he's going to do, but there's enough material where you could spend the next 5 years in this world, and I wouldn't be bored. And at the same time, you could hand it to a kid or you can hand it to a 50-year-old, and I think they'd both enjoy it. And that's hard to
Absolutely.
do. It's so hard to do. So I just found it amazing. I was like, this is a good writer. This guy's really got some writing chops. And one thing that's interesting is so many comic writers are starting to write their comics, trying to get into television or trying to get to the movies and sign the big deal. And here, I almost wonder if this guy, he's a showrunner for Lucifer, if he's obviously successful in the TV industry. Maybe he had an idea, a pitch, and it wasn't taken up. So he's testing out the waters going this way, seeing if he can build up a fan base to pitch the idea again.
I don't know. This is something that I think really suits the comic book format.
Oh, it really does. It really, really does. It's amazing. It's really good.
I mean, a lot of the things we get in this are stuff that would be awkward, expensive, challenging, or whatever to do in a live action kind of a TV show or movie.
It would be. It would be very expensive. I mean, it could be done, but how much of a budget and would it be that successful? That's hard to tell.
If I were to even remotely to attempt to say, okay, let's film this or whatever, one of my first calls would probably be Cirque du Soleil.
Oh yeah, that would be amazing. That would be really cool
Because
with all their acrobats.
these people are going to move a little differently in lower G, so you need people who can do that sort of a thing. And I mean, we've all seen, at least the commercials for Cirque du Soleil, where they're all like on the side of the poles or whatever, and their feet are outstretched like they're anti-gravity or something. I mean,
They do this stuff.
You need some very talented people physically, as well as some very talented people technically, to pull this kind of a thing off. Whereas in a comic, all you need is just a really good artist, and they got a really good artist.
Oh yeah, they did. And I mean, even though some of the sketches are rough, the one thing that I made his art so outstanding is the facial animation, the facial features, and how he's able to convey emotion with the way that people's faces look. And he really just nailed it. I was like, wow, that's good. Very good.
There was some other artist that this guy reminded me of. I just couldn't place it. It's got a familiarish style.
I'm not. Well, one thing I was going to ask you while you're thinking about that, are you surprised that this didn't end up like a Vertigo title just because of his connections with Lucifer, which came out of Neil Gaiman and the Vertigo and DC world that he went to Image?
Not really, because it certainly doesn't have a classic Vertigo feel to it.
Yeah, it's not really horror-like or anything edgy like that.
Yeah, and even while there's arguably a sci-fi aspect to it, it's incidental and it's more lighthearted than I feel would fit, at least at classic Vertigo. Current Vertigo, I don't really have a clear sensibility for, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I understand.
I think doing it as an Image comic makes a lot of sense. It certainly clears out the ownership issue substantially for him. And if you're going to do something like this, I mean, it makes a ton of sense just to own it.
Oh, definitely, definitely. So, this is a really, really good book for, like I said, young and old. Anyone out there, you can read it and then give it to your kids and let them read it if you have kids.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a ton of fun. It's one that I definitely recommend. And like I said, it was a good concept, but I've seen a lot of good concepts have, okay execution. They did a fun job on the execution.
And they ended it on a twist, not a cliffhanger, but a twist, and it was a appropriate twist.
Yeah. It's one of those things, this issue had me wanting to know more about certain things, certain characters, etc., versus, you know, you didn't finish the story, or you just barely got it started, so now I've got to come back to really find out what's going on.
Exactly. I agree 100%.
For me, this is another A. I thought it was a really good read, and like I said, one that I recommend.
Yeah, this is one I recommend to everyone. Like I said, young, old, kids, adults, whoever. Great stuff. And this is cover to cover story. There's no advertisements in here, so you're getting your money's worth. And this is an A for me as well.
Yeah, we should have more comics like this stuff.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, and doing it 100% story when you have like a 32-page comic, that can make all the difference in the world. It gives you enough pages to create a story with almost like a beginning. Here's what happened. Here's some character building. And here's why you want to read the next issue. Whereas when you're going down to that 20-page story, it's tough.
There was one comic that Drew and I reviewed a couple of years back. I don't think it was Fire Breather, or I want to say it had Prince in the name. It was an Image comic. But it was one of those that had so much story for the page count that, as I recall, the inside front cover started the story and it went all the way to the outside back cover kind of thing.
That's funny.
I mean, it just gives the sense of overflowing with story at that point.
Like, we have so much story we can't even put enough pages in the book.
Exactly.
We have to write on the covers.
I mean, to me, I think that's kind of an awesome feel of not just, crap, I got to the end, what the hell happened? But wow, there's so much story in here. I felt like a lot did happen, and I want more, and I want it now.
Exactly. And you know, with such an expensive medium and how these things read, and it makes you feel good when you get a book that you feel like it's giving you your money's worth, and you feel like so satisfied after reading it, versus I read it and wow, I really spent $3.99 on this. All right. So, but one thing I want to ask you, are you still way behind on your comics right now?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay. I don't think you've had a chance to read the latest issue of Lazarus yet, correct?
No, I have not.
Okay. Greg Rucka had, you know, that's been gone for a while because he left to do Wonder Woman, and then he came back and he was doing his other creator-owned series with the witches.
Black Magic. But he also did the Plus 66 Lazarus miniseries.
Yeah, he did Plus 66. But the main one is back. And at the end of it, he said there's going to be two more issues coming out, one next month and the month after that. And then he's switching up what he's doing. And I found this interesting because we had just been talking about, you know, Justin Jordan was looking at going OGN. Mm-hmm. And what he's looking at doing is going to an overpriced quarterly Lazarus book. So it wouldn't be like really a trade paperback, more like three issues squished into one.
Overpriced and or oversized?
Overpriced and oversized. I'm sorry. I it'll be a combo. I just said overpriced without the oversized.
Oversized, yes. And priced accordingly sounds much better than overpriced, but okay. Yeah. I get the idea.
I ruined that, so I'm sorry, Greg Rucka. That was my entertainment for the night. No,
I was going to say, it's becoming a Marvel book? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Not too far off. But it's kind of interesting. I guess a lot of these guys are writers or creators out there. They're struggling with the single-issue market and the fall-off, and I wonder if they're looking to counteract that with a bigger product that it doesn't really kill them as far as like the singles, and there's no reason to wait for the trade, really, because if you're waiting for the trade, you're just going to be paying the same price for the exact same amount of material. You're just waiting 6 months instead of 3 months. I think they're testing that.
It's interesting because Mystic U was a bi-monthly series that you arguably could have done as a six-issue miniseries monthly.
Yeah, that's true.
But they didn't, and it was one of those where the sales were around 18,000-ish, then I think 12.2, and then down to about 11,000-ish. So, I mean, there was a little bit of a fall off, but odds are if it had been, you know, half the cover price, twice as many issues, those later issues probably would have fallen a little bit more.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know where the math works out on this in terms of what approach I would suggest to somebody.
Exactly. I don't know if it's more let's not butcher the singles for the people who are waiting for the trades, or if it's more along the line of artists can't have, you know, struggle to keep up with a monthly book, but maybe they can work for 2.5 months and get 3 issues done and then take a 2-week breather instead of taking the whole 2 months off where they're kind of doing stuff, almost work towards a 2-week breather and they get like 4 vacations a year.
If somebody like Rucka is going to do that, and clearly it sounds like he's going to, what I would probably recommend is if you're going to go to a quarterly cadence, do 3 books.
Yeah.
Because that way you've got a book every month that you can be using to kind of cross-promote the other two.
That's a good idea, and he could do that with this world because this world is so in-depth. He's built a great world. He even has a role-playing game based on the world of Lazarus now. Where he could have the X plus 66 book coming out 1 month with a different artist. He could have the Lazarus title coming out in the next month, the main title. And then he could have even another character in that same world the next month. And then it just constantly rotating.
Even if they're in different worlds, having a constant book out by the writer, kind of like Mark Millar would do, and hey, my other books are over here if you want to go check them out.
Oh, so you're saying like maybe with like Black Magic and his other books, do that, like file those in there.
Something like that, yeah.
That would be smart. And I'm curious to see if it's because there are a lot of artists and writers are looking. I wonder if they're doing this because the artists are having a hard time keeping up with the monthlies. And if it's almost like you can price it accordingly where it doesn't, you can pick the paperback trade or you can pick the comics. And there's really not a price differential because right now I think that the cheapness of a trade eats into the single issue sale sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. Because if I'm looking at it and I'm paying $4 an issue and there's 6 issues, okay, well that's $24. Now if a trade is $19.99 or $14.99, if I'm budget conscious, which a lot of younger readers are, you wait for that cheaper version if you want to have a tangible version.
Absolutely. And it makes sense to do so. But the question is, if you go to a quarterly cadence or longer, how does that do for the habitual aspect of reading versus, again, now we've gotten things to where they're coming out every other week, it builds up the story momentum, but if the individual issues don't have enough meat to them, it's hard to keep the reader engaged.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit nervous with this because I love Greg Rucka so much and I love Lazarus so much. It's a great book that I hope he's not going to mess it up. And that's, I hate to say that, but I don't want this little experiment to mess up something that I love.
Yeah, I can understand that because even if they do a good job, the story frequency, the length of the installments, it changes the cadence.
Oh, yeah, it really does.
And maybe not in a detrimental sense, but certainly in some sort of a sense.
Yeah, and will that change in the cadence, will it get someone? And that's another thing that I was thinking about. If you're not picking up something every month, month in, month out, I'm getting this book, I'm getting Spider-Man, or Superman, over and over and over, it's easy to miss one, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that could hurt him. And I'm hoping he's not making a mistake by doing that, because I don't want to see him get hurt, and I don't want to see the story I love get hurt.
Yeah. No, I agree with all of that.
Yeah. It's just interesting how a lot of writers are talking about doing this, and I don't know the reason other than maybe the artist is having trouble. When I say the artist in the artist world in general.
I would be a little surprised, because that's Michael Lark on that one, right?
Yeah, Michael Lark.
He's using either Poser or Daz Studio, at least to assist on some of the art. And whether that speeds him up, slows him down, don't know, it's working for him. It's great art. But I also wonder if it's not so much how much can the artist produce, but what is a more satisfying chunk of story? And some stories are going to be a little hard to break every 20 pages.
You know, that's true. Because we've been seeing that a lot with these New Age of DC books that we've been reviewing.
Yeah.
That 20 pages really isn't enough to keep you hooked. And maybe if he can come out with something that's 60, 65 pages, where you're paying $9.99. I don't know what the price is going to be. I'm making this all up, the price. Maybe that's something that's a little easier to swallow, and you can get so much more material in there that will really hook you.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the difference between a network TV show and a Netflix show. Like the Marvel Netflix shows are averaging about 12 hours for the 13 episodes.
Yep.
But there can be a 20-minute difference in length between episodes.
Oh, yeah.
So you get one that's about 40-some-odd minutes, another one that's over an hour. And if you had to go, okay, everyone's going to be exactly 42 minutes, we're going to put commercials here, here, and here, and that's it, deal with it. That really changes how long a scene can be, how many scenes you can have, and some of that kind of stuff. And if changing up the number of pages, the frequency or whatever, gives us a better read, I'm all for it. I mean, I certainly don't need books to be coming out any faster than they're coming out.
Yeah, the double shipping is like a love-hate relationship with me, because I love that if you're not going to give me a recap where I can remember what's going on when I'm reading 200 storylines, it's easy to remember 2 weeks ago what happened. But at the same time, it's so much stuff to read. It's like, oh my gosh. I can almost see where Greg Rucka's going, and I kind of wish Marvel and DC would go to fewer titles, maybe make them bigger. You know, if you want to charge $4.99, fine, by all means. I mean, not that I want that, but fewer titles, but make those thicker titles, you know, 56 pages each one, where you're getting a chunk of material.
Make us feel that we're totally getting our money's worth and we're not questioning the price tag.
Exactly. And then that stuff is, you feel like every book that you get, you're spending time with it, because there's a lot of information to consume there in that one bite. And I'll be satisfied. I won't feel like I'm getting as much material. And I think it'll be a more satisfying read.
Yeah. And really, that's what it comes down to, is at the end of the comic, do you feel that you got your money's worth or not?
Oh, yeah. And you want to know what? This week we did, because last week I felt like some of the books were kind of rough that we had reviewed.
Yeah.
And so this week was very satisfying. I was so happy because we had two really good books in here.
Yeah, and kind of getting a week where you've got that many good books. I mean, it happens once in a while. I think we got that when we did with Thor in the Comic Book History of Comics.
Oh, yeah, that was really good, too.
We got a not the right issue of Aquaman, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great title. That just didn't showcase it.
Oh, it's true. And they came back so strong on the next issue that I was kind of disappointed on the one that we picked.
I honestly don't know that I've read the next issue of that one yet.
Well, when you get to it, let me know what you thought, because I thought it was really good.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm trying to catch up. This was not a good week for the reading. I had just some other stuff going on. So really, the only other stuff I read other than what we just talked about was I caught up on Superman before reading Action.
Okay.
Seemed like a good idea. And then I had those other two issues of Weapon X.
Oh, wow. So not much at all.
Not much at all.
So you're getting further and further behind.
I'm hoping to get some reading done this week, either Thursday night and or over the weekend. But I've got a couple other things kind of going on that's eating up a little time.
Oh, yeah. Is this the most behind you've ever been?
No. Is this the most behind I've ever been without having been traveling for a significant portion of time? Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, so that's okay. Well, I wish you the best in hopefully getting caught up and getting in some good reading time, because it feels like a weight is lifted.
No, I agree with that. Part of the tactic I'm using is starting at the furthest week back with the going alphabetically with the title, picking the title and then just, okay, let's go grab the other issues of that one and plow through it up until I hit something that's a crossover, or otherwise I've got to go read something else.
And then you stop there.
Or maybe go read the other thing. I mean, that's what happened with Doctor Strange last week.
Oh, yeah, because it had the Damnation tie-in.
So I'm pretty much current on the Damnation stuff other than what was in this week.
Oh, that's cool. And you're almost creating your own little mini trades as you're doing that.
Or not so many.
Yeah, or a very large trade.
Because I read, I don't know, 8 issues of that Damnation stuff pretty much in a row last week. And, I mean, it's good, but that certainly wasn't my plan going in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've actually, since I caught up, I've actually been reading some of my trades. So it's been nice, because I've been meaning to read old material, and I'm just trying to get caught up on old DC stuff. I'm not going to read all of it, just good highlights here and there. And I'm trying to get, you know, into other things. I've been really finding myself getting into like European comics, and I just ordered some manga for the first time, so I'm going to try that out. I just like to experience different things.
No, that's cool, and I totally get it. And it comes down to what mood are you in for what you want to read.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And lately I've been into this weird European comic kick. I just like reading. They're different. Like, our comics are so, sex is so taboo, whereas violence is just so prevalent. And in Europe, you almost get the reverse, where there, of course, there's some violence, but sex is not as taboo. And so it's just weird how the viewpoints are different.
Well, and you get subtle differences in the visual language of storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
And the art has a little bit of a different feel and stuff. And they've got a, usually, I don't say necessarily different genres, although predominantly it's non-superhero to a large degree. To me, it's kind of like when I'll watch some TV shows that are done either over in Britain or other parts of the world, which now, thanks to, you know, the internet and Netflix and stuff like that, what's accessible is amazing. And they've got a different series of shorthands, different series of patterns or whatever that they're following, and it makes for a fun departure from the norm.
Which is really cool. Yeah, and it's almost like a little bit of a palate cleanser, because if you just read the same stuff all the time, if I just read Marvel comics or I just read DC comics, and that's all I read, you could burn out, I think, eventually.
Yeah.
You got to have that switch.
You got to have that variety. You've got to have something that's, geez, I want some hard sci-fi, or I want something a little more whimsical, or I want something that's, you know, like an Uncle Scrooge or Usagi Yojimbo or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something.
Yeah.
You know, something that's different than what most of your stack might be.
Yeah, and it can all be good stuff. So I'm happy, because, like, you guys on the forums and also on the Slack channel, people just send me messages, you know, hey, check this out, check this out. And I can't buy all of it, so I'm like, hey, I'll get to it when I can. But I bought a lot of stuff. I bought Usagi Yojimbo stuff. I bought a lot of things.
I was going to say, you had, what was an 85-pound shipment of trades?
Yes, I put the videos on the Slack channel.
What do you mean you can't buy it all? I think you did.
Yeah, I was like, I'm glad I worked out, because I don't know if I would have been able to lift those boxes. 85 pounds of trades.
That's how I know at a comic store when I'm done shopping.
Yeah.
When the stack starts getting too heavy.
Yeah, I ordered a bunch of stuff and I didn't realize Eric sent me a message. He's like, 85 pounds coming your way. I was like, excuse me, 85 pounds? Oh my gosh.
That's insane. Should be some good reading, though. That's awesome.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. So,
let's see. We've got the preview spotlight. Clips are going to be due on May 5th, that Saturday morning, bright and early. So you got plenty of time.
Yes.
I believe the online solicits are starting to show up. And actually, as we record this on April 24th, tomorrow the previews comes out.
Yeah. Digital previews was up, I think, like 4 or 5 days ago.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
I've been behind on some other stuff. I just got my order into Cowabunga for last month. I mean, like, just yesterday.
Oh, wow.
I drag my feet on that. That way I don't have to, you know, it takes me a while to decide. And then the following weekend on 7 p.m. Central Time here in Texas on May 12th will be the monthly comic book page teleconference, where we get on Skype and talk about whatever we talk about.
Yeah. And so, that's always fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We've had a lot of great conversations the last couple of months, and, well, really over the years, too. It's a mixed bag as to who shows up, what the topics are, but if you've got something you want to either know about or ask about or just chat with people about comics and stuff, it's a great, great time.
Definitely. I agree.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Awesome. Join us next time as we discuss Batgirl number 22 from DC, Avengers number 690 from Marvel, and Forever Free number 1 from Titan Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.